Listen, we're keeping the Mary J. Blige love flowing.
We got to keep it flowing, man.
Welcome to another episode of the State of Black Music Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Fillionaire in the building.
Claude Kelly in the building.
Chuck Harmony in the building.
Bacon from Macon in the building.
So now that we got past our inaugural episode with the Queen, Mary J. Blige, it's only fitting that we keep the party going with a legacy of greatness. You know what I'm saying? This is the State of Black Music Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And we on fire.
Fire.
State of Black Music.
So I got a good Keeper Kill. What would you call it? A Keeper Kill what? Keeper Kill.
Challenge?
Challenge.
Sure. Challenge. Challenge.
Challenge.
And it actually came from Clark.
Oh, it's probably bad then. Go ahead.
Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, or L.A. and Babyface?
Ooh.
Keep it clean. Keep it honest.
Ugh.
I'll kill Tim and Bob.
Slow down,
slow down. I just wanna get to know you.
That's tough.
That's tough,
very
man.
Tough. It's tough. I
would say Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, but then I'll take Babyface by himself.
So you're keeping Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
I'm keeping Jimmy. And for the sake of this conversation.
And this episode. They're in this episode.
Right. I'm keeping Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Because that, like, we were listening to Human League earlier. Like, just that sound takes me back to late 80s, early 90s in the van with my family, listening to The Quiet Storm on the radio, coming back from family. Like, there's just a sound that encapsulates that whole time for me.
Yeah.
The Can You Stand the Rain? Human, Johnny Gill, Ralph Tripp, like just all the SOS bands.
Can You Stand the Rain is a perfect R&B song. You know what I'm saying? Like
from top to bottom.
Immaculate.
Yeah.
Don't touch it or change a thing perfect. I would also keep Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. They're just my musical blueprint since I was a kid. Mm. First concert I went to was Janet Jackson. First live experience in Massacre was Janet Jackson. The first time I really thought about like the production under stuff, we opened with Mary J, everything. That was one of the first times I bought a CD and I was like, who built this sound around this woman?
Mm.
And I just kept seeing, you know what I'm saying? They built a whole wall of a world around her.
Mm-hmm.
That was perfect.
So when I think about like the consummate songwriting production duo who made everyone sound just better than they ever sounded, that's like my drive when I'm in the studio is because that's what they did to every artist that came in the studio. I'm like, yo, it's got to be pristine because Jam and Lewis made everyone come out shining. So yeah, I'm picking them.
That's that sheen we be talking about.
That's that sheen we be talking about.
I too would pick Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. But and it's simple for me. Like lyric for lyric, it's A+. Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Babyface in LA. But where the edge come in is that the creativity and the production has to go to what Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis was doing. So
yo, SOS band, tell me.
What? Janet Jackson, anytime, any place, Jesus.
I want you.
on Bended Knee. Somebody tell me how to get things back the way they used to be. Oh God, give me the reason. I'm down on Bended Knee. I'll never walk again until you come back.
Listen, a lot of those extended versions of those like Rhythm Nation Janet record.
Yes.
Listen,
The extended version of Love Will Never Do.
Listen.
Ooh. Or Miss You Much.
Yes.
Where it just keeps on going. You Much.
If you got Apple Music or Spotify, go in Janet's like singles.
Mm-hmm.
And find those like EPs from the Rhythm, specifically the Rhythm Nation album, Love Will Never Do, Miss You Much, Rhythm Nation, Escapade, all those records, and just listen to those extended versions. You won't regret it.
If you're a deep Janet person, then you know 24 Play.
24 Play. Mm. Yeah.
24
That's Play. That's not on streaming services, by the way.
It's not. I have it on that number one CD I have.
Yeah.
Man, 24 Play.
That was the joint.
And then it took them forever to put Runaway on there, but
Runaway is insane.
Runaway is a jam.
What? Is this up for Usher?
Yeah.
You remind me. But you remind me of a girl that I once knew. See your face whenever
I look. And you won't believe it. Babe. They do Twerk It Out too?
Twerk It Out.
Twerk
Can
It
you
Out.
Help me?
What's your favorite film?
You know, this is tough for me because I love Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And I love L.A. and Face, and I think about all the amazing songs from that camp. But if I had to pick, for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to have to go with Jam and Lewis.
Yeah.
Janet is one of my favorite entertainers of all time. What they've done with her, a New Edition. Even when you go to like a Heather Headley moment.
I wish I was in love with you.
There's so many gems, but, you know, again, I'm with you, Timon. Like, if I can extract Babyface and keep, you know, just from a, like, he just has a special place and one of the most prolific songwriters of our generation. So, but for the sake of the conversation, yeah, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Flight Time, respective records,
absolutely.
All that. Yeah. So,
disclaimer, no disrespect to, I mean, Babyface, and they would agree that Babyface and L.A. Reid are iconic in their own way. They talk about them often, but, them chord changes, Come Back to Me.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. All my life I've waited to see your
smile again. In my mind I've hated, not able to let go. State of Black Music. I'm sorry, I just had to play that.
I just want to say, because y'all probably won't get this on the podcast, that we just played Level Never Do all the way through.
Oh, my Lord,
because
my Lord,
we couldn't
my
stop
Lord,
it.
The
my
album
Lord.
Version.
The album version.
Let me say something. You know what I noticed? You know what I've noticed from listening to that? Is that Black people, when it comes to us creating music, we can't never forget our roots. We can't never forget the church music, because
that
feeling is in that music. That's why we feel that. I just watched three other grown men We were all in worship from that whole experience in our own way.
We were. That's true.
We can't never forget it. It got to be in there. That's where the soul come from. Yeah. That's where the feeling, that's where we learn how to emote. We was talking to God. That's how we got there.
He turned it like it was a church service.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, man.
They wouldn't let it end.
That
like
whole
it was a church
thing,
service.
That love would never do that. The Mighty Clouds of Joy would have sung on that shit. You feel me?
I was also thinking as I was playing that, like, I probably can't give my other four off the top of my head for sure, but I know for sure, 100%, that Rhythm Nation is one of the most played albums I've ever played in my life.
Yeah.
100%. Like, yeah. I know I've from the time the album came out to this day.
It's up there with Thriller for me.
100%. Yeah. I've played it over, I've had it in every form. I've played every form of it out and had to buy it several times. I never get tired of that album from beginning to end. And she's got many of them. Janet and Jamie Lewis got many, but that album is
crazy.
Ooh.
I feel like I just heard a new song.
Right.
That's how it feels. It feels fresh.
I'm Shindo forever. I'm messed up.
That was crazy.
The only thing crazy in that song is the conversation.
Conversation.
That we had with
the legends themselves.
Oh, man.
Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
What is life, guys?
It's pretty awesome.
What is life? Those guys created the soundtrack to my life for sure.
Me too.
And we got to talk to them.
Dream interview. And we did it at the Roots Theater live.
The Roots Theater
at the National Museum of African American Music. So it was layers and layers of amazingness happening at one time.
A true dream come true for me. Like, yeah, man, amazing.
I was just sitting there as they were talking. I kept telling myself, Claude, just be in the moment. Like, listen to what they're saying. Like, listen to wisdom. Listen to greatness. Take it all in. Because, you know, you can tend to, like, to be distracted, especially in a live setting. I was like, just listen to what they're saying. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity here from some pioneers.
Yeah, man.
I was honored.
And you can hear now that you know what their personal messages are, what they stand for. You hear it in the music, man.
Yes.
That's what makes it so magical, man.
They were so intentional.
It was so intentional.
So intentional about everything. You can hear it and hearing them speak about it.
You can hear the love. You can hear all that detail in that. That's hours and hours and hours of detail.
You can also hear the funk.
Funk, Lord.
And I don't want to sound like the old guy that's always talking about comparing then to now, but I just feel like that's what's missing is the intentionality behind a lot of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
But with all that being said, let's hear from them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the energy we on right now.
Ooh.
When I'm having a moment, that song from the Sounds of Blackness, Optimistic, just puts me in such a happy, special, inspired. I listen to that song every single day.
Yeah, man.
From the first note, though.
From the first note, the blackness.
Until the slow fade.
Until the slow fade,
you know,
man.
I always think of that song in the same vein of, like, back in that era of, like, the different worlds and the house parties. Like, those movies that really encouraged young black people to get an education, keep it moving in the midst of the Rodney King stuff back then, all of the adversity that we were experiencing back then.
Yeah, yeah.
That song takes me back to that time.
Man.
And it, you know, to this day, it still pushes me to keep going.
That's my joint. Yeah. It was released on Perspective Records in the 90s. That was amazing. Yeah. But welcome to another week of the State of Black Music podcast.
And we're live.
We got some royalty in the building today.
Royalty is almost an understatement. I feel.
I was about to say, I know you, Claude, and you feel are used to doing the intro, but I feel like it's my duty since.
Oh. Come on, Chuck.
The single biggest influence of my musical career is in this building right now.
Wow.
And I've been able to do some things musically. One of them is to get out of East St. Louis. The other one is to help my mom. And the people that inspired me to do that is here. And so I want to give a warm welcome to my biggest inspirations, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Woo! Hey!
Hey, Chuck, I'm glad you did the intro because it was much better than mine. I mean, that was,
it was much more heartfelt.
It was
heartfelt.
Close my laptop.
It was real.
Close my laptop.
This is definitely a legendary moment for me as well because as a songwriter, growing up, there was not a lot of. I've been doing music my whole life, but very few people tell little black kids they should be a songwriter. I didn't even know it was a career until after I graduated from Berkeley, that it was a possibility. But I knew personally it was a possibility because I've literally been studying you my whole life and understanding that lyrics and melody could have power and that black men could do that. You guys were the image and the sound for me for my whole life. So I'm really excited to be talking to you all about everything.
But I gotta just start just because we kicked off the episode with Optimistic, which is by far one of my favorite songs ever written.
Yeah.
And I often hear the both of you tout how that's, I guess, one of your favorites that God loaned you. Can you take us back to that moment when creating that amazing composition of Optimistic?
Yeah, for us, we always felt like a few things. One was when we started Perspective Records, which was back in 91, we thought that there was music that wasn't getting out there that people should hear. We also felt like it wasn't sometimes about giving people the music that they wanted, but the music they needed. And so we felt that Optimistic was the song, and we thought Sounds of Blackness was the group. And I also mentioned that Sounds of Blackness, we grew up with Sounds of Blackness. They're actually celebrating their 50th anniversary this year.
Wow.
And the Optimistic song is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. But Sounds of Blackness was around 20 years before we signed them. And the thing that actually made us sign Sounds of Blackness was that we actually went to, while we were doing Rhythm Nation with Janet, she was sitting next to us, and we went to a Sounds of Blackness show. And the whole time we were doing the show, they were doing a show called it was Africa to America, or I think it was. Or was it the Evolution of Gospel? It was one of those two that they were doing. And it was all the different forms of black music, right? Which is all music, right? From rock to blues to you name it, right? And the whole time we were doing it, she was nudging us and she was going, wow, they're great. Oh, you need to sign them. You need to sign them. And we were like, yeah, okay, it's a good idea. So that's how we got started with Sounds of Blackness. But when we did Optimistic, it was also for us the idea, if you're going to build a tall building, which we were, you know, our analogy for building our record label, if you're going to build a tall building, the first thing you got to do is dig that foundation really deep. And that's what Sounds of Blackness always was for us. It was really our musical foundation. And even on our new record that's coming out next month, the song that starts it off is a Sounds of Blackness song, because we just feel like it says everything about us that, you know, needs to be said, and it also gives people what they need to hear.
What they need.
What they need.
That makes it medicine. That means it's more than just about a hit. It's a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual calling, if I'm correct.
We're totally spiritual people. I mean, our people are, that's the makeup of us. That's the base of the essence of who we are. Right. And when you have that conversation about spirituality, you have to walk the walk, not talk the talk.
Amen. Right? Yeah.
So, you know, we used to talk, well, still do. Kenny Gamble's like, the man for me.
The
Shout
man.
Out to Kenny Gamble. Gambling
up. What? Gamble. Yeah. And, you know, our conversations would always be like, music is wholesome. It's supposed to fill you with the good things in life. It's supposed to inspire you. And, you know, the saying, you know, you order shit, you eat shit.
Yeah.
You eat shit, you are shit. Because you are what you eat, or you are what you consume.
I hope everyone memorizes that, because that's the realest talk.
That's true.
So we can't feed crap to our communities, to our kids, to our people, and expect to get a good result. So
amen.
We always want to infuse the positivity, the spiritual, and the real to make sure that we have the right makeup. So we understand where we are, but we don't lose sight of where we should be.
State of Black Music.
Speaking of where we are, we're physically here in the Roots Theater at the National Museum of African American Music in Nashville, Tennessee. I got to ask you two, what does it feel like to be in such a momentous institution? What does this mean to the both of you?
It's hard for me to even articulate. somebody asked me a minute ago, they said, what was your favorite part of the museum? I said, me.
Good answer.
But what I meant by that wasn't that. What I was saying was to look on the walls and see the exhibits and see all the people and the way that black music has touched us and informed us and been our soundtrack. But to be amongst those people was amazing. And the other thing I always said is that, you know, being a living legend, which is a nice term, but the best part of being a living legend is the living part. So the fact that not only is there a museum that exists like this, but that we're actually living and able to actually take it in and see it is the most amazing thing for us. So it's nothing but love and nothing but respect here. To be sitting here is absolutely amazing, beyond words.
Yeah, we were here a few years ago when this was just a dream.
Yes. Mm.
This was just a concept. And to sit inside a realized dream is special. Yeah. Like, just to sit here and look out, like, at this is reality now.
Yeah. Right.
This is the reality we created from our thoughts and hard work.
Wow.
This is special.
State of Black
Music.
Breaking the heart.
You mentioned the album coming out next month.
Ooh.
And I'm way too excited about this. Because I'm like, what took so long? Because I've been just, as a student of music, every time you guys put out anything that you've worked on with any artist, my first question is, what is inspiration? Where does this come from? I want to know more. And so to get a full album of your guys' creative thoughts is inspiring. So my question is, number one, what took so long? And as much information as you can give us about this body of work.
Jam and Lewis Volume 1. Be clear.
Jam and Lewis.
It's on my phone right now. That's why I had to pull it up. I wasn't texting
one.
People.
And the great part is that Volume 1 suggests that there's more volumes coming.
Yes.
Right.
So, yes.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. So we'll start at the end and work backwards.
Okay.
First of all, when a special work is special to you, it has to be special to your partner. Mm-hmm. So we had to be in the best home that we could possibly find for it. Mm-hmm. And to this point, we hadn't found one until we found our partners at BMG.
Gotcha.
So they embraced our concepts, our ideas, and became our partners in fellowship and music. So it's been inspiring and it's been great. It's been smooth. Because there's nothing worse than having something that is yours and special that you want to deliver to people and your partner see it in a different way.
Amen.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. He said, tell me about it.
So it's an uphill battle at that point. Yeah. So we had those battles, and actually the first single from the album was released on another label, and we weren't too inspired by the results. So we thought it better to just take our time and move it to an appropriate spot. So,
I'm learning lessons as we speak.
Yeah, well, hey, never be afraid to change.
Right.
Never be afraid to change.
Yeah, change is good.
I will say, Terry mentions partnership, and I will say that we're really spoiled about partnership because we've known each other for, I don't know, 40, almost 50 years. I think we're a couple of years away from 50 years that we've known each other. So the word partnership, when you say it, it means certain things to certain people, but to us, obviously, it's a much deeper meaning because it's our life, literally. We've known each other our whole lives, pretty much. So we don't take that word lightly. And we think partnership is really about, you know, whenever we would walk into a situation, a label situation, a publishing situation, whatever it was, and we walk in and people would talk about what they could do for us. Well, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. And then at the end of the meeting, we would say, okay, what can we do for you? And there'd be silence. And it's like, but then that's not a partnership. Because obviously, if you're going to bring all this stuff to us, what is it that you would like us to bring to you? Is it mentorship for your young writers? Is it some recording studio space, which we have? Is it partnerships with people who maybe you can't get to or who, you know, there's all kinds of things. You have to think about that. So a lot of people just don't know how to be partners. And so I think that's a lot of what Terry's saying. We found some people that understand the idea of partnership. And that's been a great thing for us.
State of Black Music.
As far as what's taken so long, I will say the story goes back. The lore is that 35 years ago when we were doing the Control album, right before we started doing Control with Janet, we were working on our own project. Jam and Lewis project. And when the Control album was done, John McClain, who was the A&R person at A&M Records, he came up to Minneapolis to listen to what we had done. And we played him Control and Nasty and When I Think of You and Funny How Time Flies and Pleasure Principle and Let's Wait a While.
Just a couple of small songs
a few joints
that you ain't never heard before.
So we said, we're good, right? And John, like all A&R people at one time or another go, he says, I just need one more.
Of course. Always.
We said, what are you talking about? He said, I just need one more, man. I'm just missing that one. I just need that one. It was like, come on, man. So we get in the car. This is back in the cassette days, right? So Terry has a cassette of our songs. He puts the cassette in, and he goes, John, listen to this. This is some tracks from our album. So we're in the car listening, and stuff's bumping a little bit. And about the third song, John goes, that's the one I need for Janet. So what are you talking about? That's the one I need for Janet. Play it for her, and if she likes it, give it to her. I'm like, what? You just giving our songs away? Yeah, yeah. So the next day, we're like, okay, fine. Next day, we go to the studio. Janet comes in. We're in the control room. She's sitting on the couch outside the control room. So she's just kind of sitting there chilling, and we just put it on. We didn't even say, hey, we're going to play you something. We just put the beat on, right? And so it's playing. We're watching her. She's kind of watching TV for a minute. Then she kind of puts her head down like this, and she starts kind of bobbing. And then she stands up, she walks to the door, she's standing in the doorway, she's kind of looking at the speakers, and she turns and looks at Terry and points at him. So when the song goes off, she goes, who's that for? And we said, well, you if you want it. She said, oh, I want it. That song became What Have You Done For Me Lately?
Wow. Sheesh. Hold on.
Yes, Lord.
Wait, why were you ready with the vinyl? Phil came prepared with the vinyl.
I got props. Yeah. I got props.
Yeah.
So basically that, you know, launched her career and ended ours, or at least our album, that part of it. So over the years, what would happen is we would get with artists and we'd say, you know, we'd be recording and we'd say, hey, we're working on an album. On a Jam and Lewis album, would you guys want to do something for it? Oh, yeah, yeah, great. And then we finish the song, and they go, oh, no, I got to keep that for myself. So we finally got selfish about maybe 3-4 years ago. We got inducted in the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And
hello. Oh.
Thank you. So anyway, when we were going in, we went in the same year that Babyface went in. So while we were on the red carpet, and people started asking us, hey, what is it that you haven't done yet that you still want to do? And we looked over at Babyface and we said, it'd be cool to do a song with Babyface. And then we said, you know, it'd be cool to finish our album that we never finished. And then the third thing was we said it'd be great to tour because we'd never had gone out and played our own songs. So we thought it would be kind of fun to do that at some point. So at this point, we've checked off the Babyface with He Don't Know Nothing About It.
Yes.
Check. Yes.
And we checked off the album, which July 9th, everybody check. Can hear. The touring part, when things get safe again, then we'll talk about doing that too, because we're also looking forward to doing that too.
I'll be there.
I'm there. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the reason why so long it's taken so long. That's the 35-year journey. And I think, you know, we're really excited. We're really excited because as you go on in life, you realize that there's fewer first times that you can experience, right? You have fewer first times ahead of you than behind you. And I think at this point, what's exciting to us is even with the label, like when the Babyface record came out, it was most added record at radio, right? And they said, I was most added at radio. And then, oh, but that's no big deal to you guys. You guys have had a lot of those. And we said, not as artists, right? And then when it went top 10, they were like, top 10, you got a lot of those. And I said, not as artists. And it went top 5, same thing. But there's been kind of a series of those kind of events. And so for us, we just want to make them realize, as artists, this is all brand new to us. we were sitting in a meeting one day and we played some of the album and everybody liked it. And we thought, okay, great, we're done. And then they say, wait, who's going to do the videos? When are you guys doing the photo session? When are you guys going to, and I'm like going, oh man, that's right. Stuff we never had to think about before. We would just do the music and leave. And now it's like just the beginning of the journey, which is different for us. So a lot of first times that we're really excited about.
Many firsts. I love that.
Yeah, man. He don't know nothing about it.
State of Black Music.
As we sit here, the word that keeps coming to mind, especially when you talked about partnership, is longevity. And not just longevity as musicians, but longevity as friends. And as a person that's in business with his friend and musical collaborator, I want you to speak to what about you all's relationship makes it last so long? What about it?
Well, I have a simple three words. Respect. Respects, respect.
Mm.
And if you just think about it, that's kind of the mantra we live by. I respect everything about this man. I love this man deeply. Mm. If he was to go out in the world and tell somebody my kids were ugly and they came to me with that, I would say, oh, really? Well, they must be. Because people have a way of trying to get in the middle of your relationships.
Mm.
So you have to recognize what that is. That's a form of hate, you know. And people try to destroy greatness and good things about life. It's just kind of the way it is. And so we've been really fortunate that we don't deal in that world. We keep no one between us. And anyone that loves me has to love what I love for me.
Mm.
And I love him. So
I love that.
That's the way that works.
So cool.
It's been a constant in my life for how many years, Jam?
Almost 50.
Almost 50.
So, I don't do the trivia. So, it's been a great relationship. The other part of it is freedom to create. We did a handshake back 40 years ago, or whatever it was, and it was 50-50. So, whatever he does, I own 50%. Whatever I do, he owns 50%. It takes out that argument, takes out that disillusion. Who's going to get 49.5?
Right.
And who's going to get the extra 5%? Mm-hmm. Takes all that away. We're partners. The other part that is very solid in us, we have the freedom to create with each other and without each other. So he has the freedom to create anything that inspires him. And I'll be a part of it if he needs me, and I have that same freedom. So that keeps us both inspired to do different things. There's been times, I think in the last 40 years, I guess, there was a time when I was totally uninspired because I started believing that a lot of the artists didn't have the will to want to work hard. Mm-hmm. And when you want something more for someone than they want it for themselves, it becomes an issue for me.
Yes.
I can't get inspired by that. Mm. And it took a young man named Usher to kind of change that for me. Because when he came, he was like a sponge and he was just bubbly about music. And that just inspired me to get off the floor. Because I went in Jam's office one day and I sat on the floor and just told him, man, I can't find it. I just don't feel like, what else is there? Mm. And then Usher brought that back to me and I really thank him for that.
Mm.
Because it's like I thought my journey had arrived, and I never want to arrive.
I never want to arrive.
Never want to arrive. The day I make the perfect song, I got to quit. I'm done. I'm not going to chase it no more. Wow. So I hope I never make that perfect last song. I always want to be inspired to make something new and explore something different. So that's part of my journey, you know, and Jam will probably articulate it a different way because we have different ways of delivering things. As you see, I'm kind of straight to the point, direct, kick the door down.
But it's the yin and yang that makes it make so much sense.
Absolutely.
I always say with Terry, I always say what takes me a paragraph to say he can say in a sentence. And that's what makes him a great writer, a great lyricist. I remember when we were doing, on Rhythm Nation, we were doing, there was a song called Living in a World. They didn't
Living
make
Living in a World You Can't Make. Yeah. Good song.
Yeah, woo. Thank you. So I remember at that time we were working in our old Flight Time studio, but we were building our new Flight Time studio. And I remember we had the idea to do the song, and it was Janet and I were watching TV. We saw the playground shooting that happened, and we were like, we got to write a song about this. And we're going back and forth. We can't figure it out how to write it. And Terry walks into the studio with, he's got like wallpaper samples in one hand and carpet samples in the other hand. And he's like, which one of these do you think we should put in the studio? And I'm like going, Terry, no, we got a song idea, but we can't figure it out. And we give him this long explanation. And these kids were killed at the school, and it's not their fault. And such and such and such and such. And we're talking for like 5-10 minutes. And Terry just goes, living in a world they didn't make. And we're like, yeah. And he goes in the room 10 minutes later, hands us the lyrics, and then goes, okay, which wallpaper do we want?
Back to my original question, right? You know what I'm saying?
You know, I mean, it was that kind of thing. One of the formulas, I guess, that you would say for success or whatever you want to call it, is people always ask, what do you guys argue about? And I always say, we never have had an argument ever in our lives. And they say, well, how can that be? And I always say that an argument is different. See, an argument is something you're trying to win. So if I'm trying to win an argument against my partner, that means he's going to lose the argument, and I don't want to be associated with anything that makes him be losing anything, right? So I don't want to be a part of that. But if you change the word arguing to a disagreement, yes, we disagree on things. But a disagreement is something you're trying to find a solution for.
There we go.
And that's the difference. Wow. So what we do is if we disagree, we try to find a solution. Now, the solution doesn't matter if it's my way or his way. It's the best way wins. And so that's what we've always kind of subscribed to, is let's do the best way we possibly can. And also agree upon what that destination is for whatever that is. Like, let's say we're trying to write a funky song. Okay, the funky song's a destination. And I say, hey, man, let's use keyboard bass on this song. And Terry says, no, man, let me funk the real bass on that. You know, okay, well, fine. Okay, now we'll figure out how to do it. But the thing is if we get to that funky song at the end of it, that's all that matters. How we got there doesn't really matter. It's just let's make sure we get to where we need to go. So that's part of our philosophy also.
Yeah, that's called real freedom.
Yeah.
Real freedom.
State of Black Music.
Back in 1999, I remember a song that started out with Alone in a Room.
Alone in a world.
Just me and you.
It's just me and you.
Yolanda Adams, Open My Heart. Y'all remember that song? Come on now, you make some noise for Yolanda.
It's a classic.
It's a classic.
Total classic.
But a little birdie told me that Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis are back in the studio with Yolanda. Creating some greatness. This is what
rumor
I heard.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Via Epic Records. Shout out to Epic. And just how's that coming along?
Coming along well. We got kind of hampered by COVID a little bit because I think in any relationship you have to cultivate certain things. But we haven't spent enough time in the same room together. So that's where we are. We've been trying to choose songs and trying to get direction and all those kind of things. But we need to sit in the room for a while. Just like we sit here today, it's a lot more inspiring just to be in a room in person. Yeah. And so we just need to vibe out just a couple minutes. We don't need many minutes. and we'll be, Well, we got the spark already. But I think it's just the vibe that we can create in the room is just going to be more sincere. And it's going to come through the speakers better.
Right.
Did y'all know that record was going to be as big as it was? Did you all see that at that time? Because really, when I think about even gospel crossing over to mainstream charts, obviously Sounds of Blackness was a great example of that many times over, but that was a massive record for Yolanda. That was gospel, R&B, pop. I mean, that was a huge song. Did you see that at that time when you all created?
We felt really good about it. Yeah. I'll say that.
We're just doing our little Quincy Jones thing. Do a cue. Yeah. But we just wanted to do something totally inspiring. And you never know what's going to happen, man. Everybody makes hit records. We just make music. Yeah. Mm. You know, it takes the promotion people. Right. It takes the radio people. It takes the people who consume it and listen to it and appreciate it. It takes a lot of things. But one thing that I did know was when it went out, I started getting calls right away. When people finally did hear it, that they said, I pulled over and I listened to this song and I cried.
Mm.
And then I said, I did my part.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that was the whole point, is to get people connected. So, yeah. I never say it's going to be a hit or not hit. You know, we all say, yo, it's a smash. Yeah. And, you know, we use that term lightly. But I like it. And we hope someone else does too.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah. Love it.
Millions love it.
By the way, can I just say about Yolanda is that when we started Perspective Records back in 91, Yolanda was one of the people we tried to sign. And we ended up, we actually got a lot of pushback from various people who were like, well, why would you sign her? She's already signed to another label. And it was like, yeah, but you know, she's got a couple more albums and then she's done and then we would like her at our label. So it never happened. And then she ended up signing at Elektra with Sylvia Roan. And it was interesting because then Sylvia Roan called us and said, hey, you guys, I signed Yolanda. I know you guys wanted to try to sign her, but would you still be interested in working with her? And we were like, of course we would. You know, that's why we were trying to sign her, because we wanted to work with her. And it was interesting because when we finished Open My Heart, I remember we sent it to Sylvia, and Sylvia said she cried when she heard it. She said, oh my God, this song just is great. And then I remember when the album came out, they released a different single, and then they released another different single. And we called Sylvia and we said, hey, what happened to Open My Heart? I thought that was the song that, you know, made you cry. And I remember she said, well, very much record company. She said, well, it's kind of more toward the summer now. We need to be more up-tempo. And, you know, we need to, you know, this demographic and this audience and blah, 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 and crossover and whatever and all these different things. And we were like, yeah, but the song made you cry. Right. What about the song that made you cry?
Right, right.
And she said, okay. And she sent it, was it Elroy she sent it to?
Well, they picked it up off the album.
Okay. Yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, it was Chicago.
At GCI, WGCI in Chicago. And started playing it. And back in those days before, you know, social media and internet and all that, as Terry said, it was the phone calls. And whatever, he played it at the station, and all of a sudden the phones rang off the hook. And he was like, oh my God. He said, everybody's asking for this record. And then she said, okay, let's go with it. So she had the faith in it, and it was kind of one of those examples like Terry says, you know, we just make the music we like and didn't hope people agree with it. So that was a case where Sylvia, kind of against all the kind of analytics that were being done back in that day, just kind of a gut call, just said, you know what, let's go with it. And the rest is history. So we thank her for that.
Thank you, Sylvia. And Sylvia, make sure we listen to Jammin' Lewis on this forthcoming EP. Yes. Make sure that we, you know, follow instructions, Sylvia. Right. I love Sylvia Roan. Shout out to Sylvia.
State of Black Music.
Let me say this. It's amazing how God works, because literally last week I was going through all of my Alexander O'Neal records. All of my Sherelle records.
Come on, Taboo.
And you guys were responsible for much of that music that came out of Taboo. Shout out to the legendary Clarence Avant.
The Godfather. With some respect, the Godfather.
But what I would like to know is, how did working with Clarence Avant at Taboo prepare you for Perspective Records?
Way too many. Way too many. I mean, from the moment we met Clarence, our manager at the time had actually gone in and negotiated a deal for us to do SOS Band. And I remember Clarence said, now about your manager,
they're not asking for enough money. I'm like, huh? Because we were like, no, we'll make the budget less. We'll cut the budget, you know. And he was like, no, they're not asking for enough money. Wow. You guys need this because you know you're going to have this expense and this expense and this expense. And Terry and I just kind of looked at each other like, wow, okay, cool, you know. And then even when we started working on the record, we said, Clarence, you want us to send us? And he said, no, just wait till you're done. I'll hear it when it's done. So we got that freedom. We got spoiled, right? Because it wasn't somebody like in our face going, no, I want to hear everything that you're doing. It was like, no, he gave us a creative freedom to do what we wanted to do. And then when we sat in the room with him, I remember he told so many things to us, but one of them that I always remember was that one was he asked us, he said, what do you guys want to be doing in 7 years? And we said, haven't hit records. And he said, no, I'm not talking about that. He said, 7 years from now, what are you guys going to be doing? Who's going to be the next me? Who's going to be the next Berry Gordy? Who's going to be the next Lonnie Simmons? Who's going to be the next Dick Griffey? Like, who's going to be the next Gerald Busby? Or who are going to be the people that keep music alive? Who's going to get involved on boards of companies? Who's going to get involved with ASCAP and BMI? And who's going to get on these companies and do that kind of stuff? Who's going to get involved on the political side of things? Who's going to get involved on the fundraising side of things for charities and stuff? And we're like going, oh, okay. You know, like that was the first time we had a thought, because we're just thinking about, let's going to make some hits. But he's like, no, you got to think down the line a little bit and think bigger than that. And I remember, what I remember was significant about that was I remember when I got a call to be on the ASCAP board, and I called Clarence and I said, they're calling about the ASCAP board. What do you think about that? And he said, excuse my language, motherfucker, better get your ass in that room. They don't allow none of us in that room. You better make sure you get in that room. Yeah. Like, okay, cool. And then about, 5 years after that, when the Grammys called and said, hey, come and be on the board of the Grammys. And I decided to run for chairman or for vice chairman at the time. And he said the same exact thing. But I never would have had those thoughts. And when I became chairman of the Recording Academy, I remember the first thing I did was you had the opportunity to basically give an award, a trustee's award to someone. And I gave it to Clarence because he was the reason that I was even sitting in that position, was those seeds that he had planted.
State of Black Music.
Back in the day when it was the L.A. and Babyface versus Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis days, it was funny because we were actually good friends and stuff. We'd be sitting at dinner together and stuff. And people would come by and they go, aren't you L.A. and Babyface? And they'd be like, yeah. And they go, aren't you Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis? Yeah. And they'd be like, and y'all sitting having dinner together? And we're like, yeah, we're good with each other. But what he told us, what Clarence said, man, if you ever come across somebody that needs my help, he said, just let me know. They need their business straightened out or whatever. And I remember being at an award show and L.A. came up to us and said, can you introduce me to Clarence? You know, we want to get our business straight. And we said, yeah. And we called Clarence and we said, hey, Clarence, there's these guys, L.A. and Babyface. He was like, L.A. and Babyface, what kind of name is that? I said, it's like, you know, he's like, no, they're good. They're like us, basically. And, you know, they're really talented and stuff, but they need some help with their business side of things. And, of course, they went and met with Clarence and the rest is history there. So I don't know. I mean, he dropped so many things that we live, his philosophy and everything that he had to this day, you know, that he planted all the seeds basically that we needed to grow. But then he didn't just plant the seeds. He cultivated and fertilized and he did everything to for us to grow.
The Godfather.
The Godfather.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Please.
Shout out to the Godfather.
Know, you need to know.
If you don't know, you need to know. Real talk.
State of Black Music.
Clarence said some things to us that made us think about things. First of all, he said, you need to know how to count. Mm-hmm. Which basically saved our lives because, you know, it's the music business. We made the music, but you still got to get the business because the business is going to feed you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I remember going in and the first thing we did, you know, publishing companies come after you, want to sign you and co-publish and all that stuff. And Clarence sat us down and gave us the skinny about this. He's like, okay, you're going to put this song out and this revenue is going to come, but they're offering you this. By the time your money comes 9 months from now, you already made that money back. So don't sign that deal. If you sign that deal, I never want to talk to you again. And that's how he was with us. And so the business part of it was really important. So we ended up with an attorney, and I got to give him his roses now, because as a brother, he made deals that brothers weren't getting. And I say, you know, lawyers are as good as the talent that they work with, but they still have to have the concept and the respect to get that deal through. And the brother that I'm going to say is Ron Sweeney.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Wow.
Yes, because Ron made some of the most creative deals for us when people weren't getting deals like we were getting. And it was an amazing thing to watch, because he could go in and negotiate it in a way, and it always protected us from ourselves, basically. Because, you know, you can get too high on your horse. And he would put things in a proper perspective and have the payouts done the correct way. It was done very creatively and meticulously. So
wow, those are two powerful. And I'm just going to add a bonus one. And this is an executive that inspired me, who actually was running Perspective Records in the 90s, Sharon Hayward. Yeah, yeah. Sharon. Shout out to Sharon. So just much Sharon. Love. She inspired me. But y'all, this has been amazing. This has been a dream come true.
Beyond amazing. To sit here and talk to you about the real of music, the real of this business, is a gem that I think I hope people will listen to this over and over. There are so many gems dropped.
Absolutely.
So many gems dropped.
Well, it's a lot to know, man. And, you know, if you're going to play chess, you got to know what the pieces do. You can't come with your checker mentality playing chess.
Speak.
You got to know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot to lose, but yeah, there's so much to gain. You know, so understand your value. That's what it is all about.
So many gems.
Understand your value.
Ladies and gentlemen, Flight Time, Perspective, so many studios, labels I think about when these two brothers. But thank you for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Jimmy Jam, the one and only. Absolutely.
Wow.
State of Black Music.
Man, what an amazing conversation. Amazing conversation. So dope to just be in the presence of just icons, man.
Yeah, I wanted more time with them.
We didn't get to touch on Janet.
I know. But you know, I was happy is because I feel like that's where everyone goes with them.
Yeah.
And then to hear their thoughts on spirituality and influence was like, that's the stuff that I don't think people really go to ask immediately.
Yeah.
The wisdom and the knowledge and just about life in general, you can tell like they put all of that in the music. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's crazy.
And they care about, like, they care about this shit. Like, it's not just something for them to do.
Yeah. No.
It's just,
But guys, we got to make sure we support the Jam and Lewis Volume 1. It's out now.
Yeah, man.
Everybody's on that record, man. You got Sounds of Blackness, Boyz II Men, Mariah Carey, Heather Headley, Charlie Wilson, Mary J. Blige, Toni Braxton, and more. Like, it's just... This I can't wait, man.
Heavy hitters.
Okay, to check this out, man. I just want to be like, I'm building a music room in my house, and I just like, this is something I really just want to hear on the right speaker. So I listened to a little bit of the album in the car, but I just want the full experience. But yeah, check out Jam and Lewis Volume 1.
I love that. That means there's more to come.
State of Black Music.
The Esther Roll
Award.
But did you see Esther on stage? Did you see her image on stage when Taraji did the whole Year of Black Woman? Esther was right there front and center. Me to
lie down. Because we have influence. Because we have influence. They were like, you know, we should make sure to include Esther on the screen. Because of State of Black Music.
It's all because of us, right?
That's pretty much.
I got it. I understood.
So there's that part.
Y'all know what time it is.
Uh-oh.
What time is it?
It's time for us to present the award.
The award.
Black excellence as it relates to the State of Black Music podcast.
Yes,
as we see it.
Timon, you want to start?
Everybody may not know who this person is, but I've been doing a lot of research on this guy as of late. I've heard his name, seen him on a couple you know, specials here and there, kind of read him in album credits, but I've really been digging deep into what he's done in his career. Mr. Greg Filling Games.
What? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like for him.
I love Greg Filling Games.
Like he's just all over so much music from the last like 40 plus years.
The biggest music.
And he's
crazy.
Still doing it, man.
Still doing it.
If you watch the
John Mayer
video for Stop This Train.
Yeah. Mm. Not Stop This Train. Last train home.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you watch the video for Last Train Home, he's playing piano.
I got to go back and watch that.
Yeah.
Because I did not notice that.
Yep. Yeah.
So from that, Michael Jackson and Thriller.
Yes.
And all that stuff.
Anita Baker.
Anita B.
He was even on some Toto stuff.
Yeah, man.
See what I'm saying to you?
Like, yeah. Crazy. So
Greg Filling Games.
I'm going to put Greg Filling Games out there for my Irby.
I'm going to nominate an Atlanta native, Dallas Austin.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I love Dallas.
Because
Austin.
When I was watching that Boyz II Men thing, I had totally forgotten that he did Motown Philly.
Yeah.
And then it just took me down the rabbit hole of all he's done. And he does his production, if you go back and watch the whole thing, he's the person they go to break the artist because he knows how to make that like earth-shattering sound.
Mm.
TLC, Boyz II Men, and many, many others too. And I was just like, yo, this Dallas Austin is an icon, and this definitely does not get talked about enough. So I'm nominating Dallas Austin.
Dallas Austin.
Well, since we spoke to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis in this episode, I feel compelled to nominate a good friend of mine who's no longer with us on earth, Jim Wright.
Yeah, man, big Jim Wright. Yeah.
Big Jim. So, big Jim Wright. I you know, run a
that's good.
Nominate Jim Wright for the Irby.
The Irby. That's good.
That's a good one.
That was precious.
Yeah, Fly Like a Bird by Mariah Carey alone.
Yeah.
That record right there just, yeah.
A masterpiece.
Shout out to Big Jim Wright.
I'm going to nominate Peebo Bryson.
Yes. Yes.
What mean?
Listen.
I was listening to
I'm with you, Chuck. I'm with you on that one.
I was listening to A Whole New World, but
I'm not laughing at Peebo. It's just
don't do Peebo. Please don't.
No, I'm not.
He was a pop star.
Wait, so we got to put A Whole New World in there too for Chuck.
Wait, hold on.
I don't give a shit. I like that shit.
I just wasn't expecting Peebo to come out of Chuck's mouth when he said he's like, I nominate Peebo. Peebo. All right, so
I love Peebo Bryson, man.
Peebo is amazing.
He was a huge pop star.
Peebo is amazing. We met Peebo at Essence Fest.
Yeah.
Peebo was a G.
Dude has a range out of this world still.
Man. Yes. This is a tough Irby group, but it must be done. So let us now vote, shall we?
Jeez, majority rules? Is that still the?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeez.
Absolutely.
So we got Peebo Bryson, Dallas Austin, Jim Wright, and Greg Filling Games.
Yeah.
This is not fair.
Wow. Oh, jeez.
All right.
Let's start with Greg Filling Games. All in favor of Greg Filling Games?
That's three of four.
That's three of four.
Okay.
All in favor of Dallas Austin? It's three of four. All in favor of Big Jim Wright? Three of four. All in favor of Peebo Bryson? Y'all suck.
So Peebo is out.
Y'all suck.
Oh, the Lord.
This is my shit.
Oh, Lord. Okay, all right.
True balladry.
So we have a tie between Greg Filling Games,
Dallas
Austin.
The other three.
All right.
And so Big Jim Wright.
So now you can only vote for one.
Okay.
And this is gonna decide it.
All in favor of Greg Filling Games. All in favor of Dallas Austin. All in favor of Big Jim Wright. The winner is Big Jim Wright.
And a worthy honor indeed.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Big Jim Wright.
Jim Wright. Great brother.
Great.
Yeah, man.
Time to celebrate.
Is that what you did tomorrow?
That was him on the Soul Holidays.
Yeah.
Sounds about it.
Let him use you.
Let him use you, Timon.
The Irby Award winner is officially Big Jim Wright.
state of black music.
But I feel like it's been a really great episode.
Amazing episode, man.
Another legendary guest.
For me, it was just unbelievable to see Lewis York and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis on the same stage. That was epic. That's one for the books. Wow.
Yeah, man. Dream come true for sure.
Dream come true.
They are the blueprint.
They are the blueprint, and we're working hard to keep that legacy alive. So
yeah, man.
Yeah, I'm still bugging out a little about that. So that happened.
That happened. That should be the name of the episode.
That happened.
That happened.
That's good. I love you guys. It's always fun.
Always fun, y'all. Make sure you follow us on all platforms at State of Black Music on Instagram, Twitter, all of that. And also follow at NAMAM, N-M-A-A-M. That's the National Museum of African American Music. And special shout out to Visit Music City.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peace.
Until next time.
Peace.
Peace. No.